Hey folks, and welcome to Mountain Bikes Apart podcast, episode 3. We're getting on well here, onto the third episode already, and I hope you enjoyed the last two. I'd like some feedback actually to see if this kind of format works. I mentioned that the first series, which is going to be 5 to 10 episodes or so, I'm not sure yet, is mainly going to be me reading out a post from the website that has had a lot of conversation about it. And going through the kind of comments. Last time around, we looked at mountain bike maintenance. So it was my sort of my views on how often, how to do your mountain bike maintenance, and then a bit of feedback from people, readers of the site, on what they thought of the same subject. So I hope that worked in terms of giving you my view, plus a bit of some other views from other people as well. But let me know, give me some feedback. You can always get me on Twitter, Colin MC Gray, or email me on colin@mountainbikesapart.com. But I'm going to continue on. We'll get this series done. And if you don't like this format, then come back to us for a second series, which will be just the standard old talking about stuff and interviews and the like. But this time around, this episode, I'm going to go through an experience I had a couple of years ago, which was Relentless 24. Now, if you're a beginner, sort of entry-level mountain biker, you might not have heard of these type of events, but if you've been in mountain biking for any length of time, you've probably heard of the old 24-hour endurance events. Relentless 24 is one of these. It's one run by a company called No Fuss, who are based up in Fort William in the Highlands. And Relentless 24 is essentially a 24-hour race, whereby you have to do as many laps of a course in on the Fort William mountain bike trails as you can in 24 hours. Now, that sounds a bit mental, and it is, if you're going to do that by yourself. You can, luckily, do it in teams, though. So you can do it in pairs, you can do it in threes, you can do it in fours. Because we were just doing it for the first time, I went up there with a few friends, and we did it as a team of four to see how many laps we could all do as a team over 24 hours. And it was pretty special. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to read out my report that I wrote for the race, which covers pretty much everything that I thought about it. So I hope you enjoy this, and I'll just have a wee bit of a chat afterwards, plus a few comments that I got from people as well. So enjoy. My eyes spring open as the alarm blasts into life. I look over at the offending item and the clock confirms that I've been asleep around 4 hours. Of course, when I say asleep, I'm referring to the practice of lying on my back in a sleeping bag, squeezing my eyes shut and trying not to hear the whistling wind and driving rain, making a valiant attempt at knocking down the walls of my tent. It's time to get back in the bike. Not for the first time in the past 24 hours, I mutter to myself, "What the hell am I doing? Relentless 24 is going to kill me." I'm sure it wasn't my idea. I'd always thought about getting involved in a 24-hour race, but something always got in the way. I think the idea of doing it as a pair appealed as a really good challenge. It always seemed that 12 hours of biking in 24 hours would be a pretty good achievement, I thought, but never quite got into the training I'd need for that. Then there was the quad option, but 6 hours of cycling just didn't seem that much of a big deal. I've often done that over a weekend and a standard trip away, but as is often the case, a decision was made in the pub one evening. Drunk, we were doing a 24-hour day race in 2011, and we had a pretty lax few months, so we were looking at a team of four. So it was four of us, Bruce, Dylan, Rob and I. Easy peasy, we slurred. Preparation for a couple of pairs in the next one, I would say. A quick check of the interweb and we found No Fuss. Relentless 24 was in a month. The choice was made. We were on our way to Fort William. We'd thought that a 24-hour race in October might be slightly kinder to us than the infamous January Strath Puffer. But as we drove through the Glencoe Pass, wipers struggling to cope with the deluge, it seemed our guests had been optimistic. We pressed on though, finally pulling into the Nevis Range car park about 9 o'clock. Two quick tent erections later and the rain had calmed enough to at least allow some outdoors pre-hydration. Luckily Bruce had bought a box of Punk IPA, race fuel of kings of course, and we spent a relaxing couple of hours chatting Relentless 24 tactics. Our initial plan was to keep it simple, taking turns, one lap each, right up to around 10 p.m. Then we'd split into pairs, the first pair doing around 5 hours between them, while the other slept before a switch around at 3 a.m. This would mean that the first pair get up around 8 a.m. and go back to all of us taking turns one lap each for 4 hours until midday, between 8 and midday that was. Theoretically, we'd all get about 5 hours sleep. Should be a doddle, we all crowed as we got stumbled to bed Friday night about 5 beers in. So, Saturday morning of the race, proved to be a pretty murky but relatively dry day. The trail was soaked, but at least nothing much was falling. I was generously nominated as the relentless 24 starter by the rest of the team. Seemed I'd have to do a bit of running thanks to the Le Mans start. Thanks, guys. We were lined up, counted down, and it was on. Our first 24-hour race. A full day of cycling ahead of me, I lurched into motion, knees creaking in protest at the unfamiliar movement. To my horror, I was jostled from all sides as the guys around me accelerated to a full sprint, covering the 50 metres to the bikes in a matter of seconds. This might be a bit more serious than I thought. The first daylight section of the race went by in a blur of spinning pedals, mud, forest road, mud, rain, mud, roots, and a lot more mud. I was pretty lucky getting the first run, as the downhill sections were actually pretty fun initially. No Fuss had linked together a number of sections of the Nevis Range World Championship course, consisting of some nice tight turns, rocky sections, and some bit of Burmese North Shore. There's plenty of speed for those that wanted it, and many did. Inevitably, though, a few hours in and a ton of rain later, the single track resembled more bog than trail. Puddles the size of Loch Ness formed, surrounded by seas of sticking, sucking mud, and at points it was wise just to let the bike go. Sorry, it was wiser to just let the bike go than attempt to slow down, thanks to traction, which was more often found in a brand new frying pan. A report in the Linus 24 2011 can't go by without special mention to the rain, something that almost seems synonymous to No Fuss events. The rain had made itself known since early on Friday, but it decided to tease us a little by reducing to a mere spit or two by the race start. Around halfway into the first lap, though, it began to sidle in proper. From then on, I forgot any other state than damp, and in each lap, quickly delved into the realms of simply sodden. First lap, I went out with my two layers on top, shorts and lycra below, thinking it was warm enough that I might as well just get soaked and save the waterproof for later. Well, soaked I got, and soaked I stayed. With each lap came a change of clothes, and soon enough there were no more changes. There were more than a few girlish shrieks heard emanating from our tent as a sodden pair of cycling shorts were pulled on over warm, dry legs. We'd been keeping to around 55 minutes a lap until night fell, when we dropped to between an hour and a quarter. Rob had had the first dark lap, dusk falling around halfway into his second, and Dylan handed over to me around 8 p.m. for my third lap, and my first in the dark. This meant that by about 11 p.m. we had all done a lap in the dark, and three in total each. By now we were supposed to have swapped to a double teaming it, lap on, lap off in pairs. But it was becoming increasingly apparent that we'd been a bit naive in thinking that 6 hours of cycling at Relentless 24 was equal to 6 hours of cycling at Glen Tress on a Saturday afternoon. We were covering probably at twice the distance per hour as you would in a normal bike trip, just through race pressure and simply not stopping to gorge on cakes and biscuits every 20 minutes as you normally would at the trail centre. It was taking its toll, and that's not to mention the rain. And of course, it's evil. It's evil and able friend, the wind. By 11 p.m, we'd covered about 24 miles each in conditions that I wouldn't recommend you ever try if you'd like to keep your skin attached to your body. The bikes were falling apart too. We'd had two snap chains, a seized brake caliper, eight to the metal brake pads, a knackered skewer, a ton of chain suck, and literally around 9 gears between us. Yeah, that was about 2 gears per bike we were down to. And our bodies were quickly following suit. No one fancied hour on, hour off cycling through the night. We made the executive and not at all wussy decision to have one more lap each, starting with me at about 8:30, then take it up again at 6 a.m. Rob, Bruce and Dylan followed me, cycling heroically into the night through pitch black, torrential rain and increasingly unrideable trails from 10 p.m. till about 1:30 a.m, whereupon Bruce made a heroic effort and snuck another one in. So he, our last rider of the day, got in a bit before 3 a.m. and hit the sack. Which brings me back to 6 a.m. 3 hours later, that aforementioned alarm talked about earlier went off, initiating the biggest gathering of willpower I'm ever likely to experience. Listening to the rain pelting our tent, I teetered, almost succumbing to sense and rolling over in my sleeping bag. But no, the guys had cycled late into the night. It was my job to start us off again. I shivered back into my waterproofs, damp material clinging to my goosebump-covered back, and ventured out into the rain. I thought I'd experienced the worst feeling of the night already, heading out into that maelstrom, but I was wrong. The worst feeling of that night was experienced about 20 minutes later, more than halfway up the initial climb, when a marshal shouted at me, "Where the hell's your helmet? You'll have to go back, mate." And my shell-shocked delirium of climbing out of bed, pulling on freezing cold clothes and venturing into the night, I'd completely forgotten my trusty lid. Dazed and confused, fighting the urge to pick up my bike and chuck it over the hill, I turned around and freewheeled back down. An eternity later, twice as wet and three times as annoyed, I got back up to where I'd started and continued the slog uphill. The one plus side of that lap was that the sun rose towards the end, lifting my spirits with it. The final 20 minutes went by fine, and I think I actually smiled as I whizzed down the narrow single track descent that preceded the start of the final Land Rover track. It was the next day, we were most of the way there. I cruised up to the tents and apologetically prodded Rob awake. I'd heard some bad language from the boy in the past, but that moment was something special and mostly revolved around the lack of any possibility of any cycling going on today, including Jesus's inexplicable participation in said lack of chances. But get up they did, and we managed to knock out another set of laps each, finishing with Bruce a little shy of the midday mark. If I'm honest, we probably could have squeezed in another lap at that point, but the desire to pull on wet lycra had dwindled to minuscule levels, and we decided we were happy with our effort at 16 laps. I'm writing this at 9 p.m. on Sunday, 9 hours after the race finished, and I'm still slightly struggling to describe the experience. It's definitely taken on a bit of a rose tint already. I'm mainly remembering the amazing parts, the buzz of descending that first single track, dozens of riders in front and behind, the delirious peace and solitude of the dark trail during a lull in the weather on my third lap, the brilliant and slightly delirious banter of my teammates in the middle of the night as we contemplated our situation and whose wonderful idea it had been in the first place. I've just read a quote from the solo section winner, Hugh Thomas. So this is the guy that rode the whole thing by himself, 24 hours of cycling all by himself. And this summed up for him. Winner, Senior Men's Solo Relentless 24, 2011. 336 kilometres rode, 8,880 metres climbed and hit 24 times in the face by the same branch. That just sums it up. I remember some horrendous parts too, though. That weather, the story of Dylan's seized brake caliper and ensuing skewer-nut search, Rob's lap of many falls, and that weather. Was Relentless 24 2011 worth it, though? Absolutely. I'll remember that 6 a.m. lap for the rest of my life, mainly due to the fact that as I cycled it, I could picture the faces of anyone I described the situation to. Mostly a look of, are you mental? I think that's why we do these stupid events, because normal people wouldn't, and it's probably why, despite my leg, the way that my legs are now aching, I'll no doubt end up in exactly the same situation again. And then I'll be thinking, I'm bloody sure it wasn't my idea this time. So that was my report from Relentless 24 a couple of years ago. And it's funny reading that back, actually. I've not read it in a little while. It reminds me of quite a lot of it. I think it's funny at the end. It's total rose tinted spectacles. I'd happily go back and do that again. But I do still remember being absolutely miserable at a few different points during that weekend. The weather was just awful. And like I mentioned earlier on in that report, you think that 6 hours of cycling is nothing. Well, it's not nothing. I mean, it's always a fair bit of cycling, but you can do 6 hours. I've done 6 hour trips before and you're tired at the end of it, but you manage. But as soon as you're in a race, the adrenaline's going, you're going faster, you put so much more effort into it. And it's a fairly up and down trail as well. There's a fair bit of climbing on there. And by the time you've got that mud in there as well, and people around you egging you on to go faster, it's a hard 6 hours. It's pretty difficult. But I think the thing that I remember most about it was the camaraderie. It was just, I think that's the thing that would make me go back. I wouldn't do it by myself. Not just because it's bloody difficult. I couldn't ride for 12 hours by myself, but mainly because the thing I enjoyed most about it was doing it with the other guys. It was the four of us there, just blooming laughing at each other, having a great time. for that whole weekend camped there. It's just something completely out of the ordinary that we were doing and doing it together. And we talk about it all the time. Like, that's 2 years since we did it. And still, whenever the four of us meet up, or even when there's two or three of us there, it'll be mentioned at some point in the night. And it'll be mentioned of when the next one we're going to do is. I'm actually, there's a few reasons we haven't done one since. Apart from the fact that I broke my leg a couple last year, so I haven't been able to do anything for a little while. But before that as well, there's just a few reasons we couldn't fit it in. But we're definitely going to do another one of these soon. And I do feel like we need to conquer the Strath Puffer. At some point, because that's the hard one. That's the one in the middle of winter, where there's more dark than light, and more ice than trail. Dylan, actually, he was one of our one of the guys on this one, on the Rolling Stones 24. He's done the Strath Puffer before, and told us it was just absolutely mental. It just ate bikes. But that was, it was mental. That kind of was one indication of how hard that bloody race was. It's the fact that on a 6-hour ride, I went through two sets of brake pads and about two or three visits to the mechanic. And I mean, I know how to look after a bike. I know how to fix stuff, but there was no way on earth we were fixing anything by ourselves at that point. So straight into the mechanic, pay whatever the hell they wanted. They were making a fortune that night, those guys. But it's just the soil, the effort, the weather. It was just horrible. It was just eating bikes up, destroying them. And I had to, I think that was around the time that I wrote that report that I read out in the last episode, where my enduro was starting to get to fall to bits. And I just put paid to it. I think I took it entirely to pieces after that and retired the bike, as far as I remember. But anyway, if you're keen to enter a race, you could do worse than doing a 24. Maybe if you're just starting out, you might want to do some shorter ones. But I'd definitely encourage anyone that fancies doing a race to do one of the 24-hour ones with a team starting out, probably. And then you can move on to maybe trios or pairs in the future if you want a bigger challenge. But I hope that was good. I hope you enjoyed that. And thanks for coming back and listening to another podcast. Again, always like the feedback, so if you want to get back to me, let me know what you'd like to hear on future episodes, ask some questions, get me to say something on air, just get in touch either at colin@mountainbikesapart.com or at Colin McGray on Twitter. They're the two easiest ways. Or you can go on our Facebook page as well, just search Mountain Bikes Apart on Facebook and you'll find that Facebook page. You can like us and leave a comment. So thanks very much for listening, and see you next time.